Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. Currently, the minimum wage in Ontario is $16.55 per hour. But if you're living in Northumberland County, that amount should really be $20.60. That is what the Living Wage Network Ontario says. Recently, the Living Wage Network released its figures for 2023. It calculates how much it takes to live and work in one of 10 areas within Ontario. For Northumberland County, if you add up all the housing, food, transportation costs, and other expenses, your hourly wage should be at least $20.60 for a full-time employee. Craig Pickthorne, a spokesperson for the Living Wage Network Ontario, we'll explain how this organization calculates this number and its significance. More importantly, he will make a case why local employers should be embracing a living wage, while busting some of the myths surrounding higher wages. I'm so pleased to have with me today Craig Pickthorne, the Communications Coordinator for the Living Wage Network Ontario. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thanks for having me, Robert.
Let's start with the basics. What is a living wage?
So a living wage is what a worker needs to earn in order to make ends meet where they live, working full time. We encounter a lot of people in this work that are really surprised at how inadequate the minimum wage is. You can work full time, working 35, 40 hours a week, earning $16.55, and you won't be able to pay your bills. And that comes to us as a surprise to a lot of people. So a living wage is in contrast to that. And a living wage is, we look at the actual expenses that people have to, cover, where they work and where they live. And we add them all up. And then in the end, what we get is an hourly wage. And so for where you're sitting in what we call the Eastern region, there's 10 regions in Ontario. It's $20.60.
I want to get into that more in just a moment, but why is it necessary to publicize a living wage? Why even bring it up? Why make it a topic of discussion?
Well, I mean, I think that's an interesting question. We publish our work, of course, because we want people to see how we get these numbers. A lot of times they're very surprised at how high they are or how much they increase year over year. So first and foremost, we want to make sure that people see our work and, they often have, things to say or criticisms or, opinions. And that's great because that's what showing your work is all about. And our living wage calculations have evolved over the years, factors we look at. We used to only look at one family type, and now we actually aggregate three family types, because when this work first started in the 2010s, two working adults and two small children. But now the prevalence of a single adult is so much that we have to include that in the calculation as well as a single parent. So we show our work because we want people to see how we do it. And that's the major region. I mean, I think maybe you were also talking about what's the purpose of just publishing living wage rates, period. And that is to help people understand how different or how inadequate the minimum wage is. I think people have this sense that kind of is stuck in the 20th century or maybe the 19th century of like, well, minimum wage work is for people that are just starting in the workplace. They're just starting on their journey as a employer or employee rather. They're for teenagers and kids with no bills to pay. But I mean, in the 21st century, it's really, there's no debate. We know exactly who's earning a minimum wage. And Robert, 75% of people earning a minimum wage are of the age of 20 or higher. They're having to support households. They have bills to pay. So this idea that it's just teenagers, which, by the way, I firmly believe teenagers need to earn a living wage for the goals and the burdens that they're about to face in their lives. But they're not the majority of minimum wage workers. Oh, and of course, the equity seeking people of color, newcomers or women are overly represented in the ranks of minimum wage earners. So that's why we publish our living wage rates.
Many people are struggling financially right now. With the cost of groceries and gas and other essentials, it's difficult for people to make ends meet. And we've watched as the number of people using food banks has skyrocketed. Now, many of these people already have jobs, but they cannot afford the basics. And I guess this speaks to something you were saying just a moment ago. So why should we be having conversations about living wages now in the face of this current economic climate?
Well, when you legislate conditions that are such that someone can work full time and still have to use a food bank, I mean, even if you take a fiscally conservative view of how society should work, really nobody benefits from that condition except for certain employers. And even then, when you hear about opposition to increasing wages, they don't really come from the places where, or the opposition comes from the large employers, because those are the ones that rely on minimum wage work. Smaller and mid-sized employers are not the ones that statistically rely on low-wage work. And so it's important now, I think, because what kind of society do we want to construct around us? One in which people can just toil away and yet still not be able to exist. So we're trying to show that the minimum wage is not adequate. We understand that it's not instantly going to become a living wage. We're realistic. So what we do is, the other part of our work is not just calculating living wages. It's certifying employers. And we certify new employers every week, it seems. And we have 635 certified employers in the province across 875 workplaces. The large Meridian Credit Union is one of our largest employers, obviously, with 90 plus branches across Ontario, right down to a small coffee shop. So all sectors and all sizes of businesses are showing us that there's actually is a way to be profitable, to be sustainable, and yet not rely on minimum wage work.
I want to explore some of that in just a minute. But before we get on to that, let's talk a little bit about this organization, the Living Wage Network Ontario. Let's start with, what are the goals of the Living Wage Network Ontario?
Sure. So we really have, it's a pretty simple mission. Mission number one, make sure that we certify living wages for our 10 regions across the province, and that they are, peer reviewed, that we publish our work and it's consistent year over year, so you can compare them. And mission number two is to certify and recognize employers that pay it. And that certification carries with it, you're in our searchable database. So someone could just go to ontariolivingwage.ca/directory and just hit near me, and you can see all the employers that are around you that are certified living wage. And so those are two things that we do. But what we're really, that's our mission. That's what we do. But our mission is to bring to an end working poverty. And you do that by just paying people enough to live. That's what the living wage is about.
When was the organization founded?
It's sort of amorphous, right? So it started, the first living wage calculation in the province was done in 2007. And then there's others that were done for other cities in Hamilton and mainly in the south of Ontario, Waterloo and Kitchener. But they were all sort of, they had their own little local idiosyncrasies and flavors, and the calculations were all done in a slightly different way. And so fast forward around 2013, these local organizers thought, wouldn't it be great if we could all just do the calculation the same way? You're looking at different local expenses for sure, but you're still the spreadsheet, and it was actually a spreadsheet. The spreadsheet is the same, we just put in different factors. And so that happened around 2013, and then 2016-17, we became a more formalized entity with two people working on contract, and that was going well. We were certifying employers. And then in 2020, in February of 2020, we became an incorporated nonprofit and began to collect employer fees to support two staff. And that's how we keep the lights on. It takes two people full-time and with some part-time and contract help to maintain the directory of employers and recognize new employers and do the calculation work and do outreach just like this.
We've talked a little bit so far about calculating this living wage. I'd like to talk about it in some detail. How do you determine the various costs? For example, let's start with housing costs. Can you give an example of how you calculate how much it costs for housing?
We rely on the Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation, Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation, for that data. And that's really, and we're totally open about this in our documentation, that's really data from the previous year. So although we release the living wages in, you know, November, the first Monday of every November, so this year is November 6th, we release those wages. The housing numbers are a year out of date. It's something that we're looking at improving. But that's what we use to collect the housing data.
What about food costs? Can you tell us how you calculate food costs?
That depends. Some cities and some municipalities have the capacity to do their own, what are usually called some variation of like a nutritious food basket. So they collect information, local information, and we use that, and they're more than happy to share their work with us. Other times we have to rely on Statistics Canada for that information. So it's a mix depending on where you are. But that's, either one of those is a pretty in-depth statistical analysis of the consumer costs of food. And usually this is actually different from when we first started. The attempt here is to really put the cost of not only just the bare minimum food, but actually, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables, just fresh, enjoyable food that people would want to eat, not just, you know, canned food and whatnot.
I mean, you talk about stuff like adult education. You mentioned childcare. You mentioned a cell phone plan, an internet plan, toiletries, furniture, household supplies, laundry, school, bank fees, reading materials, recreation, entertainment, all are on your list. Birthday presents are even in your calculation. People might hear all of that and say, look, those are extraneous. Those are the extras. And when we're talking about minimum wage and, you know, what should be covered by a minimum wage, those shouldn't be included. Make a case that justifies all these other expenses when you're trying to, I mean, you say it's not much, but in some people's minds, those are just extras.
Yeah, look, the reason why we include everything to live a reasonable life, and one that most anybody that would object to us including that stuff in a calculation enjoys all of those things in perpetuity. Everyone deserves to be able to make ends meet, and not only that, not only just survive, but if you're working full time, you should be able to take a modest vacation. You should be able to participate in community and have some time to go and do the things that you want to do where you live. Because we know that if you think that you're granting childcare money to someone you're paying a living wage, and you've raised them up from the minimum wage, we know that across society, as I said before, the people that are earning minimum wage are trying to get by. They're trying to support a household, and they're trying to, not only do that, but better themselves and perhaps move up in the wage scales. They can't do that if you're just surviving on minimum wage. That's a known fact. And another thing I'll say too, is that especially when it comes to the locality of our living wage calculations, if you raise the pay of the lowest paid workers, what we know is, and this has been studied time and time again, is that that money doesn't leave Kawartha Lakes. It stays in Kawartha Lakes. It stays in the local economy because that's where those folks spend, those increases in wages. So it's not only good for workers. We know it's good for businesses. I mean, that's what they tell us unprompted. Our recruitment costs go down. Our costs associated with training are reduced year over year. We have better retention, better productivity. So it's good for businesses. It's good for workers, obviously. So that's the case that we make for the living wage.
So how do you do the outreach to the employers? How does that work?
Honestly, Robert, we hardly do any outreach to employers. They almost always come to us. Employers themselves make the best recruiters. A lot of times we ask, employers unprompted, how did you hear about us? And, about half the time they say peers. So they've heard about it from, somewhere else, somebody else in their sector. And they hear about the benefits and then they come to us. We do the odd webinar or, business breakfast, or we'll do deputations to city councils when the city council is considering becoming a living wage employer. And doing things like this helps, get people acquainted with what a living wage is. But for the most part, we're not cold calling businesses or whatnot, trying to get them to become a certified living wage employer.
In Northumberland, there are 7 living wage employers in Cobourg. There's 1 in Port Hope and 1 in Colborne. What can you tell us? Is this typical for a rural area like ours?
So So what we've got to remember is that we didn't have full coverage of the province with a living wage rate until last year. So in many places in the province, we're only just getting started. And so, now we have, what we were doing up until last year was we were relying on municipal and county and district boundaries for our living wage rate, distinct living wage rates. But the problem is there's 48 of those boundaries in the province, so we're not going to do 48 living wage rates, obviously. So we spent many years trying to figure out a boundary system that made sense and cover the entire province with living wage rates. There's 10 regions. And so we're going to see some of those regions that previously didn't have any coverage are going to, pick up steam. And so we hope that there'll be many more certified living wage employers in the future.
Many employers deliberately hire people to work part-time to lower business costs. How does a living wage help these people when they cannot get sufficient hours to create an overall sufficient income?
Yeah, that's something that we don't address with our living wage rates. We calculate them to be what a person must earn while working 35 hours a week. And like you said, there's a lot of times when a business model will be constructed around the possibility of only hiring, part-time work. So in our calculation, we don't really have much to say about that. But you do know, if an employer decided to certify and they had a bunch of people working part-time, they would enjoy a raise in pay. If they say an employer in Cobourg decided to become certified, they would see a $4.05 raise if they decided to become, up from the minimum wage to $20.60. So I'm sure the employer or employee would report that as a positive, but like you said, it won't be able to make ends meet on just that one part-time job.
Many employers complain when minimum wages go up. How do you expect them to agree to pay a living wage?
Yeah, when the minimum wage goes up, we always get a call. We do a lot of, media, a lot of talking with the folks in the media, sometimes in a split screen, sometimes with, people who represent small businesses and say that it's too soon, it's too much. And I get it. They're only just doing their job. They're just there, just like me. I'd say that there's you know, over 600 employers that say, I'm making this work. Some of them came to us before the pandemic, but over half of them came to us over the course of the pandemic. Despite all those hardships, they're able to certify and remain certified. And some of them grow. We had a cleaning company that started out in Kitchener. They've grown to you know, dozens of locations all over the province over the course of the pandemic. And cleaning is one of those industries that is known to rely on underwaged or low-waged work, and yet they all pay a local living wage. So it is possible. They're not a fantasy. You know, they exist. You can go see them at ontariolivingwage.ca/directory. They're all right there. There is another way.
But don't these costs get passed on to consumers? And those are things that are likely to drive things like inflation. How does it fit into the overall economic structure so that it doesn't drive inflation, make things more expensive, yeah, and then we get into this cycle?
All right. So I'm going to veer a little bit off my pay grade here. I'm not an economist, but the big but. Wages don't drive inflation. And what drives inflation is usually you have to go right to the larger entities where there's greedflation. It's not wages of people earning $16.55. If they go up, that's not the reason why the Bank of Canada raises interest rates. Economists have studied this tirelessly over and over again, and they show that that's not, it's really hard to demonstrate at best like a null effect on the economy for raising wages. So it's problematic to make that assertion. And there's others that can do that much better than I have, but I'll just defer to them. The bottom line is that we had a great province-wide experiment in 2018. We said, what if we raised minimum wage up from $11.45 to $14, the biggest raise that about almost a million people ever got in the province in history. And so we experimented with that. And how did the experiment go? Job growth increased year over year. By 2019, it went up by 2.8% or something, which was more than the previous years. And that didn't, you know, presage some kind of big crash. That didn't, businesses weren't closing en masse as was predicted by a lot of economists working for banks and so forth. None of that doomsday came to pass. And that was, we tried that on a million people. So it's just one of those things we hear about because there's people that are doing their jobs on the other side of this conversation. But it's becoming harder and harder to make that case as time goes on.
What are your goals in the future?
Be out of a job. Just no job for me because the province has adopted our regime of calculating a living wage and made that the minimum wage. But, you know, that's my cheeky answer. I know that's not going to happen. Our goal is to have so many living wage employers in the province that you kind of don't even need to have to look them up because they're everywhere. Much in the same way, like if you wanted to get organic apples, you kind of just go to the end of the aisle or they're there. In the same way, in that they're not as expensive as when they first came out. They're ubiquitous. That would be the same way as for certified living wage employers. It'd be easy just as a consumer to just patronize certified living wage employers only. That would be, I think, a major goal of ours.
Greg Pixlern, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Robert. Appreciate it.
That was Craig Pixlern, a spokesperson for the Living Wage Network Ontario. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.